Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that has just one host at a time. I'm Jake Mintz, and I'm not joined by Jordan Schusterman, who is still on his honeymoon. He will be back on Wednesday. Now, if you like our show and you're like, enough of this high concept bullshit where it's not just the two of you guys talking about baseball, well, I have bad news because we're going to do one more of those before Jordan gets back from the Caribbean on Wednesday. And when that happens, we will talk all about the latest news in the baseball world, the Mitch Haniger, Robbie Ray trade. We will talk about Teoscar Hernandez going to the Dodgers, Harrison Bader and Sean Manaea going to the Mets, and the closing window for Shota Imanaga, who has to sign by the end of the week. But today's show is going to be slightly different. I'm currently in Los Angeles, California, a small town in southwestern United States, with my friend, a good friend of the show, Pedro Mora, our favorite former baseball writer. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the 2023 season through the eyes of someone who did not watch it. We had Pedro on in May to discuss what I think we did. It was basically an exit interview with you after a decade of ball writing. And so I'm at Pedro's house here in Los Angeles and figured it would be a good time to check back in. Before we do that, remember, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We hope everybody enjoyed our interview with Vanderbilt University coach Tim Corbin that we posted on Friday. And of course, our very fun New Year's podcast in which we interviewed, Pedro, you'll like this, a cycling podcaster who had never seen a baseball game before in his life.
You watch it with him?
We sent him the full clip of a full game. He watched the entire game, wrote down all of his questions, and we helped answer them. The best.
What was a sample question? Yeah.
Oh, it was like, what are the white bags for? The white squares for? The best moment of that was when he described Felix Bautista's fastball as ooh la la. That was high, those were high numbers. So even he could tell that he was trucking heat. But enough of that. We're here with Pedro Mora. Hello, Pedro.
Hi, Jake. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for coming on. Pedro, before we get into how you took in the 2023 baseball season, can you just remind people your former bona fides?
Yeah, I was the kid obsessed with baseball as a child. Pursued it in high school and college.
Writing about it, not playing it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I pursued playing it as far as I could. But you don't have to remind me that it wasn't very long. For me, baseball was always a statistical based love. It was the idea that I could understand it. I could catch up. You know, I was the child of immigrant parents and I didn't understand much about American culture, but baseball seemed to offer me when I was like 9, 10, it seemed clear to me that if I could understand this, if I just studied it and I could then have a grasp on this like quintessential American thing. And I pursued that for a long time. And that led to a job at the Orange County Register as a backup baseball writer, then as the Angels beat writer for the LA Times, and then as the Dodgers beat writer for the Athletic, and then as the National Baseball writer for Fox Sports. And then, a little more than a year ago, I made the decision to kind of fade out. And then I left at the end of April. And now I'm here.
Who won the World Series?
The Texas Rangers.
All right. Pedro, yeah. Thank you so much for coming on. It was really a pleasure. That's all we need to talk about. Do you know who the MVPs were?
When you say MVPs, what do you mean?
There's one in the American League and there's one in the National League.
Oh, Corey Seager was the MVP, I believe. I have no idea who was the MVP in the other league.
that is wrong. Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like in the playoffs.
Oh, in the playoffs. No. Regular season MVPs.
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani. I knew that. Yeah. Promise. No, I don't know. Yeah. You know? No.
So I just wanted to establish for people that you really did not take in the 2023 season. You were working technically for the first month of it.
Yeah, I know what happened in the first month fairly well. And then, you know, if it was a really big deal, if it related to the Dodgers in a massive way, it came up generally in like conversations with people. It was hard. It's not like I don't know anything that happened.
Like, you know that Clayton Kershaw did not exactly end his season in shining fashion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know that. Although I know that from like my friends who are in the industry, not necessarily from like from people in Los Angeles just talking about it, but like the fact that Ohtani signed with the Dodgers was unignorable. You know, that was not, that's not, I don't know that because I used to work in the industry. That just sort of happened.
You're a citizen of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Okay. When you stepped away, I remember talking with you about how you thought baseball was going to remain. Like the extent to which baseball was going to remain a part of your life. And it seems to me that it was not really this year. How much baseball did you consume? Did you watch? Let's just say, how much live baseball did you watch this year?
Probably like 12 pitches. Max 20. But I saw plenty of, like, I saw plenty of baseball reference pages, you know. I
interesting.
It's still what's always been my into baseball is just the idea that, you know, you spend 5 minutes browsing on 40 different pages and you have some grasp of, like, you know, the people you're invested in, like how they're doing.
So you spent more time on baseball reference than you did watching baseball games.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Easily. By an order of 10.
It was more just checking in on how people were doing, because you can't turn on a Dodgers game and immediately know how good Chris Taylor is this year. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. But also, it also matters that the baseball games are during the time that other people are free and want to hang out. You know, they're in the evenings. And so it's like, there's just not that much of a desire for me to be watching it. Like, that was kind of one of the reasons I decided to leave the industry, was I didn't want to be busy at 7:30 on a Wednesday.
I was gonna ask, so let's talk about your evenings.
Yeah.
Did having your evenings free, which was a departure from the rest of your summers as an adult, we'll say, for the baseball season, did that make you a happier person?
It's been a good year for me. I don't, you know, quantifiably, did it make me happier? I don't know. I mean, you know, I there were definitely some benefits. There were also some downsides from, you know, feeling, you know, I'm pursuing a few different things, but I haven't gone 100% down any secondary path. And it's, you know, there's an element of aimlessness that you feel. I think, in America, if you don't have a career path that you're immediately on, and so that contributed to some anxiety about it, but I anticipated that to some extent. So I don't know, like they're kind of warring forces. I don't know which won out. Like I definitely enjoyed not having to worry about things that I stopped caring about. So I understand that that's that almost everyone has to do that professionally. But I think that sports are better left to the people who do care. I think the point is to have real investment from everyone involved. And I just came to lack that over time. I still have a little bit of it for the, you know, for the statistics, as I was saying, but I don't have the, I no longer really care about the pitch sequencing and whatnot. So
like that is the fuel that keeps me moving every day.
For sure.
And I don't think that that's a good thing or a bad thing in either way. Like, okay. So then what baseball did you take in? Like, when you were going through those baseball reference pages every once in a while, did you enjoy that experience?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to check in and like have an expectation and then have it be, you know, changed in some way pretty dramatically sometimes from what you expected. My typical experience would be that I was reading Sam Miller's newsletter and then he mentioned some player and it sounded like that player was maybe doing something different than I expected. And then I would go to his website. I pretty much read 80% of my baseball writing was Sam's newsletter. And so he shaped what I followed and I liked it that way. And that's my plan for 2024 as well.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Was there anything that particularly surprised you that stood out?
Mike Trout kind of fading and aging was probably the biggest thing. You know, at the start of the season, I think I still picked him as my MVP, which was the first time I was really wrong about Mike Trout in a negative capacity. You know, he'd been hurt the past few years, but like this was the first time he was actually just not that good.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, he was still really good, but he
was still hurt.
But he played like 80 games and he was like, he had like a 130 or whatever, not like a 170.
He was solid.
He was solid, but he was not, you know.
He was an all-star. He wasn't a god.
Yeah. And it's strange, you know, for having spent the last 10 years in a world where he was a god, it's an adjustment.
Close proximity.
Yeah,
to
very
him
close.
As well.
Mm-hmm. And trying to, you know, so much of my job for a few years there was literally just processing how this happened. Like how he, this seemingly normal man, became a god.
Very normal man.
Yeah. Became a god. So it's, you know, I've spent so many hours thinking and analyzing and asking people about that. And so for it to be over or potentially over or over for now is strange.
And it's disappointing because the reason why it is over for now is uninteresting because he's older. And
it's so normal. It's like, it's so basic. I wish it was a little bit more like some strange cause.
Like he got addicted to like soda.
Sure.
You know, he just started drinking pop. And like,
I don't know about started. I feel like
soda boy.
I think you might drink some soda. Yeah.
But like really started drinking soda.
Yeah.
And like that threw his career down. But instead it's just.
Or anything. Just like, what if he just ate too much Panda Express before the games and he was fatigued from too much orange chicken? Yeah. I mean, there could be all kinds of causes.
Or he went on vacation and like had a moment where, like you maybe, where he was like, I don't need this anymore. And he like just walked away at the peak of his powers. That would be interesting. But instead.
I guess what I would say is we don't know that that's not the case.
I think
Are you certain?
I'm not certain. And maybe I can, you know, do this job this year and ask around about Mike Trout and Panda Express, but no free ads. I just think that he's too injured and too old, or not too old, but he's getting older. And that is life, right? Such is life.
Yeah.
But you're right, because the
we assume aging, but you know, it could be something else. I'm not 100% confident, and I don't think you should be either.
Yeah.
But it seems that way.
It certainly smells. Yeah. Certainly smells like aging. So one of the other major stories of the season was Corey Seager, a person who you spent a lot of time around during your years as a writer covering the Los Angeles Dodgers. Corey Seager, who joined the Texas Rangers and then became the story of October this year. For the second time in his career. And Corey Seager reemerging on a national stage and being the guy. Like in 2020, he was one of the Dodgers, right? And he was probably the Dodger with the best postseason run.
Yeah, that's how I remember it. Yeah.
But he was a major character on that team. For the Rangers, he was like the guy. Your time covering Corey Seager, the person. I'm curious what your takeaways were from that, because he, with his reemergence on the national stage, there were the jokes that came along with that about how he is, you know, comically bland. Do you get the sense that he is purposefully bland, that there is a second level beneath Corey Seager that he is hiding from the rest of us, or are we just getting unadulterated, genuine boringness?
I think he is both bland, but purposely more bland to the public than he actually is.
What a lovely combo.
Yeah, I think he does not see the benefit in opening himself up to the general public. That includes reporters, because he correctly sees, you know, reporters as a conduit to the general public. It's frustrating. It was frustrating from a reporter's perspective to witness that, to be around that. Corey found a lot of ways to get out of interviews with me.
What are some ones that you remember?
Calling over people when we were in an interview to interrupt the interview, for example, and then be like, "Oh, I gotta go," but smile and be nice through it, and just be like, "Okay, yeah, all right."
Like call a trainer over.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I remember he did this once with Tommy Lasorda. Tommy walked into the room and he was, we were far away from him, but he, Corey wanted him to come over and he did. Yeah.
And then you were done.
Yeah. And he's like, I'll find you again later. And then I had to run the story.
He didn't do that.
So, you know, it was never like, he was never mean, rude.
Never confrontational.
No, not at all. But, just like, oh, I don't have to do this, you know? And, I don't have a convincing, you know, argument to the contrary.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is he right? Because Corey Seager's life seems to be what Corey Seager wants his life to be.
My guess would be, he certainly seems by any conventional measure to be successful. I don't think there's any disputing that. I don't know how happy he is. I don't know. It did not always seem like he was having the most joy around. You know, he would not be in the top third of my joy rankings among major leaguers that I covered. But I don't know. You can't judge that from the outside.
I can't remember who I asked at some point this postseason. I asked someone if they thought Corey Seager was having fun.
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, I think this is how he has fun.
Very possible.
And I understand that, but I would never want that to be my life. Like, I would never want the joy of the thing to be like grinding through the process and never celebrating it. He did have a moment, I don't know if you saw this, he did have a moment of very brief glee and personality peeked through during the Rangers parade.
Oh, yeah? He like cursed on stage?
No, absolutely not. No, he would never. When the Astros won the division, which they did, spoilers,
okay,
over the Rangers by a game, I believe, or they tied. And in the end, Alex Bregman in the celebration had a speech where he said, people were asking what would happen if the Astros if the Astros didn't win the division. I guess we'll never know. And then he popped the champagne, which is like sharp. And then Seager said at the parade, people asked what would happen if the Rangers never won the World Series. I guess we'll never know. So he was clearly like poking fun at Bregman, I would say you would know more than me, qualifies as a very spicy Corey Seager thing to say in public.
Yeah, sure.
Relatively.
That's one of those things that I'm like, I'm happy to be not around, is like these, the degree of ball player, like everything that a player says being made to be so much more interesting and compelling than it actually is, you know, like that's just not, it's a very boring sequence of events, truly. Like,
no,
but because they're prominent people, we have to treat it as some sort of, you know, there's like all these, I'm sure it was like a subject of, commentary on television. And I just can't imagine really caring about that too much.
Yeah.
It is interesting, like the threshold for which like they're considered amazing, like spicy remarks, you know. I remember, yeah.
The bar is the floor.
There was like this guy, Hector Neris. Is that right?
Yeah.
And he like he like did something to he like made some sort of remark to the Dodgers, like some sort of mild thing, and then like Max Muncy was like very upset about it, and he said something like, I don't even remember. I'm kind of glad I don't remember, but basically, all the chirps I've ever covered, like they've never actually been interesting. You know, like Get It Out of the Ocean is like
solid.
Like,
solid.
Is it? I don't know. I mean, you hit a ball in the water, not even really an ocean, and you say, and the player's upset about it. Yeah, and you say, Get It Out of the Ocean. Like, what's is that creative?
If you had said Get It Out of the Bay, would you feel differently?
I'd probably like it slightly more. I'm a literalist.
Yeah,
you know, slightly more. It's not terrible. It's just like what. It's not a notable comment.
What's the spiciest baseball thing that you can remember from your time? Like a thing that, because Jordan and I talk about this, right? There's like multiple levels of baseball commentary from players where like there's not funny players. There's funny for baseball. And then there's like genuinely funny and entertaining people who happen to be baseball players. And I would say that's a relatively short list. Like I think Joey Votto is funny and interesting as a human being who happens to play baseball. But are there any like spicy remarks that you can remember where you're like, oh, wow, like that was actually genuinely disrespectful?
Disrespectful? I don't know. I've heard some players say some very funny things that I have not been able to, you know, that were off the record in some capacity or another.
Yeah.
I heard Kike Hernandez say some things that really made me laugh a couple times. Like, yeah, hilarious. Things that I still think about to this day.
Okay.
There are some guys that are funny. I think the problem is when they're fun, you know, Joey Votto seems like a funny man, but like he's in this room where he's, you know, dramatically funnier than all the other dudes. And so he's come to realize he sees himself as like this comedian. And I don't know that it rises to that level.
Mm.
So.
Right. It is a small pond.
Yeah.
Where you can be a medium sized fish.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Okay. I'll think of nothing comes to mind as like something that I remember verbatim, but there are some that every once in a while I'll just be living and I'll be like, oh yeah, that was funny when this player said that.
You'll just be living.
Yep.
It'll come to your mind. Another topic I want to talk to you about is Shohei Ohtani, who you mentioned that crossed into your world, mm-hmm. that crossed over. I'll start very simply. To what extent has Shohei Ohtani signing with the Dodgers been like felt in LA as a normal human being? As someone who, like, let's just say you've never covered baseball.
I would say more than any other thing that has happened to the Dodgers since I've lived in Los Angeles, with the possible exception, no, not even, of the 2020 World Series, but that was because that was still in a pandemic era where people were not associating with others quite as much. So I would say in my, what is it, 12 years of living, no, more if you count college, 10 to 15 years of living in Los Angeles, there's never been something that has been talked about quite as much, no.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I think that $700 million makes people, you know, alarmed, excited,
alarmed.
It gets the people going.
It does. Know? When I was in Australia on this trek with Australians, and they asked me what I did, and I explained what I did, and they knew, like, literally they knew nothing about baseball.
But they heard about Ohtani.
And they had heard about this American sports guy who was Japanese. Making $700 million. That does get the people going, even though it is not really $700 million.
Yeah, I tried explaining it to one person and then I gave up on the whole like deferred money thing. I'm not going to,
I think it's pretty easy.
No, it's just, they just didn't care. It wasn't that I didn't successfully explain it. It was just that it's still $700 million. And so it's just, okay, yeah.
Which I think is the point of the contract.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's smart from their perspective, from the team's perspective.
They're like, well, we can give you $450 million and everyone will think it's $700 million.
No, it's genius, really. Yeah, if you can get away with it.
And it feels like they have. What do you think the impact will be on the Los Angeles Dodgers moving forward, him being on the team? Like, I know that's a very vague...
I think they'll probably win more games.
Okay. Do you think... So it appears that there are really two reasons for signing Ohtani. One is so that they can win more games. And the other is that they kind of... I get the sense that they want to Yankee-ify themselves on a global stage where they want people wearing Dodgers hats around the world in the same way that, like, you can go to Thailand and you'll just, like, see someone wearing a Yankees hat and they don't know who, you know, Joe Torre is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, do you think that do you think that signing Ohtani will enable that?
I mean, it certainly seems like they'll monetize it more, you know? It seems like they'll make more money from it. I think it's less, I would imagine that in their organization, they think about it less from like how many hats are being worn in this country and more like how many hats are we selling in this country. It's from a monetization perspective, it seems like the Ohtani signing is going to make them a ton of money. I don't see how it's not financially successful, because this year alone, they're going to turn a massive profit. And so, you know, within a few years, they should have already made back most of that money. And then, you know, then you have bonus years. And yeah, he's probably not going to be especially valuable when he's 38 or whatever, but by then it should be very lucrative. So yeah, I would think financially it'll be great for them.
Do you anticipate going to a baseball game this year?
Probably not. They're expensive to go to as a fan.
A major league game.
Yeah.
Because when I was here for the...
We went to
when I was here for the All-Star game in 2022, we went to a college league game. And that seemed to be a relaxing experience. You could bring your own beer.
Yeah. Yeah,
sit in the crowd.
I would go to a minor league game if there was one near me, but the powers that be have unfortunately built all the minor league teams like in the distant suburbs and nowhere in anywhere remotely close to Los Angeles, nowhere near the coast or anything like that. I would love for that to change. It should change. I think many people want that to change, but as it stands now, it just doesn't make that much sense to me to drive 70 miles. It's like 55 miles each way to go to a minor league game.
Right.
When I live 4 miles from Dodger Stadium.
But so. Also you won't be doing that. Do you have any gravitational pull to go to Dodger Stadium because you drive by it like, or drive near it around it very often.
It's true.
Do you feel any sort of emotional pang when you go by there? Because you fell in love with baseball in part because of the Dodgers.
There. Walking into Dodger Stadium crying as a 7-year old. Yeah.
And then it was your life for a long time. And now.
No, I feel like it ran its course. It ran its course for me. You know, by the time I was, I lingered in it longer than the passion was still there, enough to know that, you know, it's gone. I mean, you know, I can't rule it out and say like in 5 years I won't be wanting to come back, but it doesn't feel that way right now.
But it does feel, Jordan and I talk about this a lot, is like the fandom, that pure childish fandom that I think is very innocent and pure and powerful and drives quite a bit of the sport and sports as a whole, right? Is people feeling an emotional deep connection to these teams as institutions because you're from a place and it means something to you as a kid and it continues meaning something to you.
Yeah. Family connections. Meant something to your parents. Yeah.
Of course. After working in the game for a significant period of time, that does dwindle. And like Jordan has done a better job of maintaining his unadulterated Mariners appreciation that I have for my Orioles appreciation. But there's like, it's laundry. A lot of it is laundry, right? To be cynical about it.
Yeah.
And for you, you cannot anticipate that coming back.
I would be, yeah, there's no way, because for me, I came to see it as, you know, enriching billionaires, you know, and I don't want to do that. I want to spend as little of money as possible on enriching the people who are exploiting the people who need it. So that's ultimately what was part of my distaste for professional sports. I understand you have to deal with that. There's no ethical consumption in capitalism. Like I hear that, I get it, but the enabling that is part of it is frustrating for me. That said, like you can still appreciate the athletes performing. You know, I did derive a lot of joy from watching Mookie Betts play baseball. I derived a lot of joy from watching Mike Trout previously play baseball. Like I think it's amazing to specialize in one thing and get amazing at it. I also think it's pretty cool and undervalued to be good at a bunch of different things, which is not, I think, what baseball celebrates. And I don't what professional sports celebrate. And I think
isn't that what Shohei Ohtani is?
He's at two different things, right? Two.
Three if you include running.
Did he steal a lot of bases? He stole a lot of bases?
I think so.
Like how many?
Well, I can check a baseball reference. Mm.
I thought they were like toning that down.
Maybe. Well, I don't know if you know stolen bases were up.
Yeah, I did know that. Yeah, I saw that in Sam Miller's newsletter.
That's all Sam writes about. It's just stolen bases were up.
He did. He wrote a big piece about that.
I highly recommend everybody who's listening, if you don't already,
read Sam Miller's newsletter.
It's outstanding stuff. Shohei Ohtani stole 20 bases this year. I would describe that as a lot.
How many caughts?
Probably too many, because six.
Yeah, it's pretty mid, isn't it?
But he's fast. Anyway, I get your point. It's not as if he's also like makes a mean paella.
The specialization that makes you amazing is cool to an extent, but it's just, I think it's over celebrated because it leads to people being, you know, all kinds of negative things, uninformed on certain subjects. It's not something that I think needs more celebrating than it already gets.
Do you miss writing?
Yeah, I do. I miss reporting. Reporting is, you know, the coolest job ever in some ways. Like, being able to have a license to be nosy about something, it's incredible.
It's a license to learn. And it's like, okay, so in our lives, like as non-reporters, non-journalists, like if we have a question about something, we can Google it and we can get 80% of the answer, mm-hmm. right? And often that is enough, at least to satiate like our immediate curiosity on a subject. Like last night, you and I were on your couch and we were like, what is the biggest like lake in the world? Mm-hmm. Inland Lake. And we Googled it. We found out it was the Caspian Sea. And that was it. And then, but if we wanted to like write, you know, 2,000 words on the Caspian Sea, we would get closer to 100% on something. And when you are a reporter on a subject, you are getting to as close to 100 as you can, or you are at least engaging in the journey of trying to get to 100%.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it. Yeah, I think it's pretty far away from 100 a lot of the times.
Is there any subject where you felt like you got to 100?
No. Absolutely not. No.
Okay.
Because there's just so much that in any interview, there's so much that cannot be said.
Yeah.
There's so much that cannot be said.
Yeah.
And
that, but you miss reporting.
I do. Like, no, the feeling of the best thing that was about that entire job was when you had an interest, in something and it started on a path to try to report it out. And when someone told you something that you knew was getting to that question and you knew how, and my mind would start kind of telling the story from the top. during, you know, during the conversation. And I loved that feeling. It was addicting to be able to start unfurling what you sought. I loved that.
Have you scratched that itch in another way, that specific?
Yeah, I've been taking classes on other things I'm interested in. And it's I'm not quite there because I don't know enough to have specific questions, you know? My life in baseball kind of allowed me to know enough to know all the right questions to ask. Or I shouldn't say all the right questions. To know some right questions to ask and get further down the line. The other things I'm pursuing, I'm more of a novice at them. And so I'm not, you know, in some ways it's easier to collect new information. You know, I can increase my knowledge so by 10% in like a week, you know, but I can't get like a specific, you know, I don't get to know that much about a plant or something like that. I can't know among the most of an outside observer about a plant in a brief span.
You knew more about the Dodgers than anybody who did not work for the Dodgers.
Most people.
I was going to say, like, you were probably in the top 10.
People who were not employed by the Dodgers or related to someone employed by the Dodgers. Yeah, that's probably right.
Right.
And that just because, not because of any like specific talent, but simply because of time. Like that was what I was paid to do.
Right. And being in the top 10 of knowing about a thing
is
like
really hard.
Really cool because you feel very comfortable.
Yeah.
In that space. But like you said, leads to a level of specialization that restricts you from gaining, from having that in other spheres.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially in sports where it happens at night. Yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean? Like you just don't have time.
Yeah. Other thing, you know, the world runs nine to five by and large. And the baseball doesn't. And so it creates a situation where you're not lining up with other people. And if you devoted your life to learning, you know, all of California's native plants, like that is mostly done during the daytime, because of the sun, and you cannot, but at the latest you're free at 8:30, you know, and sometimes right now sunsets at probably 5:01 p.m. in LA. So it jives with the rest of the world a little bit better in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
let me ask you actually about writing specifically, about putting words together to make thoughts.
Have heard of it?
Yeah, yeah. Some people love it. Some people hate it.
Yeah,
actually, you have. Have you written anything?
I've written a couple things. I've written some things for myself, and I've written a couple. Just one, maybe article. I wrote an article, a freelance article for the LA Times about Latinidad and whether Brazilians, what I identify as, counts as being Latino. It was an interesting experience going back to that after a few months away. Yeah. I think you were going to ask like, do I miss feeling like the feeling of digging in on something and writing about it?
Yeah.
In some ways, you know, I was always anxious about it. I would have liked to have worked on that more and gotten better at removing the anxiety from the process. And I never quite got there. I think it's just, you know, I think that's for a lot of people, it's an anxiety inducing process to know that you're doing something that is then public for good.
Forever.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I didn't love how much that dominated my space. You know, if there was somehow a job where like you could just report on things and then keep them and then, you know, and they, keep them like private thereafter, or to like a small group of people, you know, that'd be an interesting position. Although, you know, then there is the rush of like knowing that you've got some really interesting information that the world's going to want to know. And so I get the appeal of that too.
That was an incredibly relatable thing because Jordan and I doing the reporting, learning how to do the reporting over the last 2 years has been very fun. But like once you compile all the different things that are interesting,
yeah,
they're in my brain. I know them already. Mm-hmm. Right. And as a selfish human, we're all selfish. As a selfish person, like I have all the facts in my brain. I know it. I'm excited about it. And part of me is excited to share that with people.
Yeah.
Genuinely. But I also was like, well, I get it. Why do I have to write this down and explain it to you?
Yeah.
Right? Like exactly. It's in my head.
And anytime you're sharing it with a significant quantity of people, some of them are going to take it the wrong way. Some of them are not going to understand it the way you wanted it to be understood or the way you intended. And I struggled with that part too.
Yeah.
Just dealing with the inevitable, you know, subset of people who saw it differently and made a stink about it.
Yeah. You have baseball gloves in the trunk of your car.
Mm-hmm.
Have you used them this year?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Did you enjoy that?
Oh hell yeah.
So you are still deriving joy from throwing a ball?
I mean, have you thrown a ball recently?
Yes.
Is it ever not fun? Has anyone not enjoyed throwing a ball?
I have not enjoyed throwing a ball, but that was
when you were like doing it like in college or something, or what?
No, when my elbow.
Oh, when you were injured? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Okay, that's fair.
But I think yeah, for the most part, I've always enjoyed throwing a ball.
Yeah, I love it.
That activity is completely detached from any type of like professional baseball coverage.
Right. They're very different. I mean, yeah, they're just, it's just tossing something with your friend, chilling. I play a lot of frisbee, and it's a similar activity. You know, it's just a little bit different, and some people are better at throwing a baseball than I. Like them both pretty much fairly equally. I'm better now at throwing a frisbee, and but whatever, you know, whatever the other person I'm around is willing to is down for, I'm up for.
I actually threw a baseball like a frisbee from the same angle.
That's only one way to throw a frisbee.
Well, yeah, I know you can throw it. There's really
the traditional way is like this, backhanded. Sorry, this is an audio medium.
You can't really pitch that way.
Right, that's what I mean. That's the most common. You know, 80% of frisbees are thrown that way.
There are three ways to throw a frisbee, more or less. Right? There's Josh Colmenter.
Yeah,
this is right over the top.
You know what they call that?
That's like a kickoff throw, right? Like a, what do they call it?
A hammer.
A hammer. Yes, yeah. I knew that. Hammer. Jordan would be embarrassed that I didn't know that.
There's actually, I wouldn't even be able to relay all of them, but people have taught me. There's many more. There's a scoober, which I'm never clear on exactly what that is.
Sounds like a slur.
It's not. I don't think. And then there's others too, but scoober definitely. Someone threw a scoober the other day, and it's a good throw.
So you saw someone throw a scoober, yeah, but you still don't know what it is,
dude. I mean, have you watched baseball? I mean, I've never actually been able to make a slider slide. Truly,
you've never thrown a slider.
I've tried to throw a slider on hundreds of occasions.
Maybe I would do that today. You want to learn how to throw a slider?
Sure.
I think we can make that happen. Last thing I want to ask you about is you had a wager with another member of the baseball media.
Are we allowed to talk about that?
I'm not going to say the person's name.
Oh, okay.
You had a wager with another member of the baseball media for a very minimal amount of money, relatively, compared to what baseball players make, very minimal amount of money. Between whether or who would have more war in 2023?
Yeah.
Ozzie Albies and or Paul Goldschmidt. And this bet was made in 2018?
I believe 2018. Yeah.
And it was not cumulative war from 18 to 23.
It was in 23.
Just in 23. Oh. And you had Ozzie Albies.
Yes.
And the other person had Paul Goldschmidt.
Mm-hmm.
And for every single season between then and now, Paul Goldschmidt was pretty significantly better than Ozzie Albies.
And especially in one of those years. I think in one of them, Ozzie might have been slightly better.
Yeah, but for the most part, undeniable Paul Goldschmidt
was better. Yeah, in 2022, it was like he had 6x or something like that. It was
he won the MVP.
Yeah, it was a crushing. Yeah.
And you entered this year probably worried or wary about your ability to win this irrelevant wager.
But still hopeful.
And you did win.
Yeah, I won.
Did you follow this periodically throughout the season?
Yeah, I was checking in.
If I looked at your most viewed baseball reference player pages, would it be Ozzie Albies?
I was usually looking at it on my phone. But yeah, there was a point during the season where in the Safari on my phone in the frequently visited, Ozzie's BB Ref was like number two. Yeah, I think. I was keeping up, especially down the stretch. Like I remember I was very frustrated. He came back from an injury and played at Coors Field, and the Atlanta team scored like, I don't know, 70 runs at Coors Field in this game. And Ozzie went like 0-7 or something like that. I mean, I'm overstating both numbers, but I actually think he went 0-6. And he dropped by like 0.2 in WAR. And I was like, oh no, I'm going to lose this based on this.
And there was also, I think, a series at the end of the year between the Cardinals.
Yeah. But by then, Ozzie had it in the bag. Yeah.
Yeah, you felt good about it. When you made that wager, why? Why? What motivated you to?
The aging curve, baby. Yeah.
The aging curve.
I mean, you know, Ozzie's 9 years younger than Paul Goldschmidt, I believe.
Yeah.
It was really, we were judging Ozzie at that time at an age where almost all of his peers were still in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
And so it felt like he was solid. I was confident he would at least be solid when he was 26, as long as he was healthy. And I was confident that I thought that Goldschmidt would decline with age, which he generally has, with the exception of 2022.
Were you right or wrong? I think you were both right.
Yeah. I was.
You won, but you were.
I was definitely somewhat wrong about Paul, for sure. I did not anticipate him producing an MVP in 2022. or later in that bet. I would say I was slightly more right than wrong.
Yeah. You were right about Ozzie, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there any baseball players that you miss thinking about? And are there any baseball players I was going to say that you are happy you'd never have to think about again, but that's probably a lot of them. But are there any players that you miss like having in your brain as a regular character who you like miss seeing and interacting with and thinking about and having as a character up in your head? We're baseball people, managers. Fires, coaches.
None of those.
People who bring you
coaches. They're yeah,
like Wash.
Wash. Yeah, I never covered him as a beat member, but that's insane that he's going to be the manager of the Angels now. I heard that. Eric Young Sr. was such a delightful man.
Who is going to be the third base coach for the Angels?
Oh, I didn't
going
know
with Wash.
That's great.
UI is good people.
Good for him. Eric Young Jr. also a nice person. Player wise, probably the stock answer for anyone who's ever been on a beat with him, Ross Stripling. You know, always I always felt better after talking to him than before talking to him.
The investor.
The investor, a lot of things. You know, Ross definitely not someone who's specialized at the expense of other things in life. He has a lot of stuff going on.
Right. Like I don't think all of his alternate pursuits are pursuits that I would engage in, but I respect that he has
that. Yeah. He's got a lot of interests, and I think that's cool, and he's happy to share them with people. He has incredible tolerance for just like listening to people for a person in that prominence level. So I always enjoyed speaking with him.
Ross Stripling is back on the Giants, still in the Giants.
Yeah, I talked to him before I left the industry, and he had signed a 2-year deal with an opt out. Yeah. Which so he did not have a good season. I'm sure he did not opt out.
Yeah, he opted in.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Ross Stripling, thank you for being
joyous and kind.
And kind. Well, shouts out to Ross Stripling. Pedro Mora, thank you for being joyous and kind.
Oh, thanks.
I will never opt out of our friendship unless you have a bad year. Okay. In which case.
So you got a club option?
I won't pick up your options. That's like a Black Mirror episode. Yeah. That you just
options.
Your friends contract. Have options.
It probably exists in this city right now. There's probably someone signing a friendship contract today.
Great town we live in. Pedro, anything you would like to plug?
No.
Where can people find the things that you're passionate about? Not instead of where can people find your work?
Check back with me like in a little while. There's nothing public facing right now.
Not what I'm saying. Oh. Like what are things vaguely topics that you're passionate about where people can find work that
you can come if you're in Los Angeles, you can come volunteer with me at Avenue 33 Farm in Lincoln Heights, where we grow crops to feed the community. And we work with kids at Los Angeles Leadership Academy, this school right there. You can also find me at various native plantings across the area, including at the Theodore Payne Foundation. Catch me outside or something.
Catch me outside. Pedro, thank you.
SiriusXM Podcasts.